This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. It's a rocky place for movies this weekend. We've got some older movies that were only a couple weeks old that came out with limited releases right around Christmas, and I'm going to be talking about them now because they're going wide. That's Patriots Day and Live by Night. There's also a couple smaller movies that are opening now that have gotten buried into January, and that includes Sleepless, Monster Trucks, and The Bye-Bye Man. I'm also going to be talking about news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup with a little feature I'm going to be tweaking a little bit for 2017, and that is the home cinema spotlight on Nerdland this week. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, you can find me on twitter.com/Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I guess first I have to address the comments made by Meryl Streep at the Golden Globes. When this happened, I remember, you know, the Golden Globes happened and nothing really came out of it. I mean, it was very predictable. There's no big thing except for this one bit. And that's when Meryl Streep did her speech for the Cecil B. DeMille Lifetime Achievement Award. And I remember when I heard this and I rolled my eyes because I don't like talking politics on the show. I'm not a politics guy. I mean, sure, I have my own political views, but I don't like talking politics. Because you want to hear politics on the radio, you can go anywhere, really, to get that. If you're not talking about sports, it's usually politics. But now and then, politics and entertainment collide, sometimes spectacularly, and that happened this last week. And I went and I rewatched the speech, I read the speech, and I came to the realization that what Meryl Streep said was not unreasonable. It was kind of surprising because I was expecting it to be, as everyone was reporting, oh my God, this just big liberal flood. Really wasn't. Now, you can get annoyed that she used that time to talk politics. I mean, she won the Lifetime Achievement Award. She didn't take all that time talking about who got her there, her teachers, her mentors, the films and the producers and the directors and the actors that helped her along her way to the billion nominations and awards that she's won over the years. She wasn't able to talk about her history or anything like that. She chose to talk about politics. And that actually doesn't bother me when a celebrity takes that time because they earned that time. Just like when Patricia Arquette talked about gender equality in her Oscar speech a couple years ago, I remember a lot of people asked me about that. Was it appropriate? I'm like, well, sure. She earned that time. She's given that amount of time because she did this great acting performance. She can choose to talk about it however wants to. When I got annoyed with it is I remember about 20 years ago, they had the Oscars and like presenters, people would come up to present an award, or they actually have this series where they'll present a presenter, which is ridiculous to me. And I remember it was the first year that they really realized the reach of the Oscars and like a billion people have access to this. And you know, Richard Gere was up there talking about the Dalai Lama and all this nonsense. That annoys me because you're hired to present. You're not hired to give your political opinion. But if you win the Oscar or you win the Golden Globe, that's your time. But even then, I listen to it and I'm like, what she said's not unreasonable. I mean, look, what were the big things she said? Don't mock the disabled. And of course, she was talking about the famous spot where Trump appears to mock a disabled journalist. And even if he didn't mean to, and I've heard both sides of it, and I've heard the people say, well, you know, that's just sort of a move that he does when he mocks anybody and just happened to be this guy and he would just over-exaggerate it, even if that's true. It was inappropriate, taken out of context or not. Look, I got kids in school. If I got a call from any of their principals and I found out that my kid was doing that, there'd be a reckoning when they got home. Even if they didn't mean it to be taken that way, you'd still get a reckoning. That's not leadership behavior. That was wrong. And for her to say, look, let's not mock people's disabilities, especially when we're at the highest level. She's not wrong with that. Second thing she said, talked about Hollywood being diverse. It is diverse. And the audience is diverse. What she said about people like, you know, Amy Adams and Dev Patel and Natalie Portman and all these other actors being born in other countries and representing different cultures and ethnicities, she's not wrong. And the reality is that's important to Hollywood. The audience is diverse. That's the way the world is. And if you don't believe that, look at movies. Look at the box office potential of black cinema. And I'm not just talking about Tyler Perry. I'm talking about a lot of things. This weekend, last weekend, Hidden Figures beat Rogue One. That's diverse cinema there. The Latino and Hispanic culture as a demographic group, that movie, Instructions Not Included, that came out a couple years ago, ended up making like almost $100 million. And it was in Spanish. Or I live in an area where if you go, there's a local theater here nearby. And they're constantly playing Bollywood movies there. I mean, it's a major AMC theater, but they play Bollywood movies all the time because there's a large Indian population in and around where I live. This is the world it is. You know, Hollywood's diverse. America's diverse. And then the third thing she said was the persecution of the press. And this was just a couple days before the White House threatened to kick out a CNN reporter. And look, you know, regardless of your political affiliation, that should bother you. That cuts, as an old newspaper guy, and as somebody who's worked in the media for years, that bothers me. Outside of politics, I mean, what if during an Obama press conference, he was going to kick out somebody from Fox News? Or if Bush had kicked out MSNBC, or if Bill Clinton had kicked out the Wall Street Journal, I mean, or Reagan didn't talk to Dan Rather. But even Clinton went after like talk radio in the 90s. That upset me and that upset a lot of people. Why is it not a problem now? Don't be blinded by your politics when a politically polarized person makes a good point. I mean, is Meryl Streep liberal? Absolutely. Was she a Hillary Clinton supporter? Absolutely. Did what she say on that Golden Globe stage, was that really bad? Was that unreasonable? No, it really wasn't. And if you're bothered by Meryl Streep making that statement because she's essentially an entertainer whose public persona was sort of developed in movies and interviews, take a look at who she was talking about, whose public persona was developed as a person who was in the media and TV and on wrestling and everything. Reasonable thought is reasonable thought. It doesn't matter who's saying it. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Let's talk about Baywatch. Here's the Baywatch trailer.
We're staring into the abyss here. City Council's already cut our funding. It's up to us to restore the Baywatch brand.
This is the guy you think is a good PR opportunity for us.
Do some shots!
He's reckless.
We got a dead body on our beach. Welcome to Baywatch.
This is one of those movies that could be an absolute disaster. It looks like they're trying to go for comedy, but they're not committing to the comedy like they did with 21 Jump Street. I mean, it looks bouncy and slick and oily sheened and everything, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see. This trailer doesn't seem to know where it wants to go. And, you know, I never watched Baywatch on TV, so it could be very accurate. But, I don't know, it looks like it wants to go comedy, but it's not ready to commit. Anyways, we'll see when it opens, May 26th. The next one I want to talk about is Cars 3, which opens on June 16th.
You will never be the racer you once were. Accept it.
Will Lightning McQueen retire?
I decide when I'm done.
Jackson Storm is part of the next generation of high-tech racers.
Win number 3 for the rookie sensation.
I'm coming for you, Storm.
It's been over 10 years since the first Cars came out, which seems like forever to me. But still, Pixar was kind of in its adolescence at that point. It hadn't become the powerhouse that it is today. It was getting there. That was one of the movies that helped put it on the map, at least in terms of merchandising, because this thing's been merchandised like crazy. This one looks like the darker cousin to it, and you get that a lot with sequels. You know, but the thing that blew my mind, again, you can't see this on the radio, but is the cinematography of this, the landscapes and the textures and the materials looks like it was actually filmed. I mean, we've gotten to the point of almost hyper-realism with Pixar. You don't get a whole lot of sense of what the movie's going to be like, but boy, is it a neat thing to watch. And I'm curious. I mean, I always have faith in Pixar. So I'll look forward to this one. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, no politics. I'll be talking about Sleepless and the Bye Bye Man.
Stop it now.
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews since we have several films to talk about this week. I'm going to hit some of the new ones this week first. And the first one I want to hit that's up on the chopping block is Sleepless. A dirty Vegas cop spends his time trying to track down his kidnapped son and get 25 kilos of cocaine to the rightful criminal owners.
The city is crawling with dirty cops.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nevada's finest.
Looking for this?
Vincent Downs, homicide.
Jennifer Bryant, we're internal affairs.
Drop him off by 9 p.m.
Vincent Downs, you stole something from me.
Bring it back or your son's not coming home.
This stars Jamie Foxx. And as you watch this film, it's kind of hard to remember that he actually won an Oscar for something because this is such a terrible movie. It reminds me a lot of Triple Nine. If you remember that movie from last year or hear me talking about it, it actually made my top 10 worst lists of last year. And then what I hated about Triple Nine is that everyone was dirty. It was all about dirty cops and worse bad guys. It just wasn't entertaining to go see in the movies. You couldn't root for anyone, and I kind of felt that way with this one. Now, there's some cliches that go on in this movie that try to sort of win back your approval of the hero, but it's kind of a little too late, and it still doesn't make the character good. And on top of it, you have so many cop cliches in this movie. I honestly felt like I was watching something from the 90s. I felt like I was watching something maybe late 80s, early 90s, something that would have gone almost directly to Showtime or Cinemax. In terms of its originality and plotting and format, it's sad to see some of the names in this movie. I mean, you got Jamie Foxx, he won an Oscar. You got Michelle Monaghan. She's actually pretty good in the movie. You got Dermot Mulroney playing one of the bad guys. You got Scoot McNairy playing this really hardcore gangster. The film, though, while it has some interesting action sequences to it, it spends too much of its time trying to be a cat and mouse thriller, with sort of Michelle Monaghan being the badass in the whole thing. Plus, the kid that gets kidnapped, he's kidnapped by gangsters. I'm like, honest to God, hardcore gangsters. And the kid's like, giving him attitude. I don't want to go in here. Ugh. And you're like, dude, this kid would have been shot in the foot at this point. And the other thing is, there's a certain thing that happens in movies, and they make fun of it with Last Action Hero, which came out in the early 90s, and it was even lampooned a bit in the Die Hard movies because John McClane actually gets hurt. He's not a super cop. He's not invulnerable. In this movie, like, Jamie Foxx's character, when they kidnap his son, they stab him in the side, like, right in the solar plexus. I mean, they probably punctured a lung or might even have clipped a kidney. And then he's just kind of like running around, like he's got a stitch in his side. No, that would put you out, like possibly permanently. It's just so ridiculous. And then throughout the rest of the movie, every now and then he's like, that's whenever he slows down. But otherwise, he's super cop. And it becomes ludicrous at a certain point. So, you know, regardless of the good people in it, it feels like a made-for-cable Showtime cop movie that would have never seen actual theaters in the 90s. So I'm going to have to say that Sleepless sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Bye Bye Man. Oh, I said the name. I'm not supposed to say it because apparently nobody's allowed to hear this name because it's bad. A group of college students stumble upon a demonic entity that causes normal people to act like violent psychopaths.
Don't say it. Don't think it.
Something's coming.
What? The bye-bye man. He's trying to get inside of us. He makes us do things. The more scared we are, the more powerful he gets.
This is a real shame that this movie turned out the way it did. Because there are certain parts to it that I have to say are pretty impressive. The problem is that the special effects are so terrible. There's a CGI evil ghost dog in this. He's all like bloody and it looks like something that was, again, like how I said, Sleepless felt like a movie from the 90s. This looked like it was something that had been done in the mid 90s, the special effects. The CGI dog looks terrible. I mean, like embarrassingly terrible. And the guy who plays the bye-bye man, who's sort of this creepy, ghostly entity, he's played by Doug Jones. And Doug Jones, I actually know Doug Jones. I've met him a couple times. And he's one of the nicest men in Hollywood. And he's very tall and thin. And he's done a lot of movies where he does this tall, thin, gangly thing. He was in Falling Skies as one of the aliens. He's was the best known for being in the Hellboy movies where he was the Abe Sapien character, the fish guy. And he's very tall, very thin, and I've met him in person, and he is that tall and thin. And he is insurmountably creepy in this movie. Kind of brilliantly creepy in the movie. He's great. It's just unfortunate that this lame movie is wrapped around him. Like I said, there's some neat cinematic moments. There's some neat use of light and shadow. There's some very creepy moments. And it's actually a really neat concept that if you say the bye-bye man and you get that name in your head, that gives it power. And the whole thing is that somebody in the 60s had killed everybody who had ever heard him say bye-bye man and had suppressed it as best possible, still leaving around stupid clues that people could then find 45 years later. It's a neat concept. It's just horribly executed. And in a way, it feels like it's trying to be like It Follows, if you remember that horror film from a couple years ago, which was brilliant. And it feels like it's trying to do that kind of stalkerish kind of dream logic, going insane kind of movie, but it just misses the mark completely. Part of it is it's PG-13, which is fine. You can have decent PG-13 horror. I've seen horror movies that are PG-13 or PG even that work as horror movies, but this one doesn't. It needed more blood. I mean, to the point, there's a guy, he's going around in one scene, the guy in the past who was killing people who he had said the name to, and he's running around this neighborhood with a shotgun killing his neighbors. There's no, I mean, like, no blood. And I know PG-13 doesn't allow you much blood at all, but you can't go on a shotgun rampage without a little bit of blood. And he's like, literally shoots somebody against the wall. And they make a point to digitally put in where she bumps into the wall, where the wall breaks a bit, but there's not a drop of blood spilt anywhere. It becomes ridiculous. It becomes almost laughable because it's the most cartoony violent movie. Because if you have something where you have overt violence happening on screen and you don't put an appropriate amount of blood, it's going to look like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. And it becomes laughable. And then there are like just these weird things that happen that are just poor filmmaking elements. Like there's a scene where this woman gets hit by a train and like the engineer leans out the window, is like, move, and starts pulling the brakes. And then later on, they're questioning the police and the police is saying, oh yeah, the engineer heard you saying this. I'm like, really? The engineer's sticking his head out of a speeding locomotive and going to hear that conversation? Or there's a scene where the guy's trying to type into a search engine, the bye-bye man, and it says zero results. And I lean to my son who I took to the movie and I said, that was a terrible search engine. Because if you were to say like, oh, the Hello Guild, which as far as I know, there's no Hello Guild. But if you type in the Hello Guild to a search engine, you're going to get everything with the, everything with hello, and everything with guild anywhere in the sentence. And the acting is bad. I mean, the main characters are bad and they're not fleshed out. It's not a big surprise that this is coming out in the middle of January. It's a crappy January horror movie, but it had such potential. It could have been good, but it wasn't. So the Bye Bye Man sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the new old movies, Patriot's Day and Live by Night. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare.
In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. In this segment, I'm going to be talking about movies, and this always happens at the beginning of January and through the middle of January and even well into February sometimes. These are movies that got released technically in 2016. We saw that last week when I was talking about like Hidden Figures, but this week we have two movies that technically I think came out on Christmas Day. But they were only in a couple theaters. They do that to make them eligible for awards. It's so crowded at Christmas, they don't want to actually release it wide. So they do the limited release, and then they take a movie like Patriot's Day, which is done by Peter Berg. And he did most famously Lone Survivor a couple years ago with Mark Wahlberg, who's also in Patriot's Day. Lone Survivor actually did extremely well in January when it came out, partly because it seems to be a good time to release these sort of military-minded movies. And we saw that with, obviously, American Sniper was a huge hit the next year. Right at Christmas, it's so busy. Nobody is worrying about seeing those movies at Christmas. They're worried about the big blockbusters like Sing or Star Wars. And now that it's sort of, you're going up against other movies like The Bye Bye Man, so why not put in something like Patriot's Day? And that's what we've got here. And so let's talk a little bit about the movie. Peter Berg directs this procedural docudrama about the behind the scenes of the authorities leading up to and in the aftermath of the Boston Marathon bombing.
We have multiple explosions. We need help down here.
It's terrorism. We'll take it.
And let's get an evidence grid started right over there.
Clock is ticking. The world is watching.
The suspect seen on the surveillance cameras.
Two bombers.
We gotta find these guys before they do this to someone else.
We can't have our citizens on the streets with all these threats. Every inch of this city is getting searched. We're shutting it down.
This does remind me a lot of Lone Survivor and Deepwater Horizon, both by Peter Berg. And Peter Berg, when he started out directing movies, he was kind of a hack. And he's done other crap, like Battleship, which is total garbage. But when Peter Berg is given a true story and actually has to face the people that it's about, it reminds me a little bit of about this time last year when 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi came out, directed by Michael Bay. Whereas Michael Bay is just a hack when he's making a Transformers movie, but if he's making a movie where he's got to actually face and honor the people involved in the movie, he kind of, his feet were held to the fire, and that's kind of what made 13 Hours a good movie, in my opinion. In this one, Patriot's Day is similar to Deepwater Horizon and Lone Survivor in that these are real people, and there are real survivors, and there are real characters in here, and there's an attempt to honor those who were real-life counterparts to the story and those who lost their lives in the Boston Marathon bombing. So Berg takes a somewhat hands-off approach in terms of over-characterization and sensationalizing things. I mean, it's still a Peter Berg movie. It still gets a little big at times. But it reminds me a lot of Deepwater Horizon, where it just sort of just takes you along the day. There's no big surprises because this was all played out in the news. Even more so than Deepwater Horizon. One thing Deepwater Horizon did was it showed what happened on that oil rig and sort of, I mean, it was there were some licenses taken, but it certainly showed the series of events that led to the failure of the oil rig. And in Patriot's Day, this shows the series of events that happened and from these cops' point of view, these Boston cops, mainly played by Mark Wahlberg. But it also shows the bombers. It shows kind of their beginnings. I don't know how much liberties were taken with this, but they show how this all went down, leading up to it, how the authorities got certain information, got certain leads, how those were given to the public. And of course, we saw it from our perspective, from the public side, from the media side, that was all filtered through the media. This sort of gives the inside look. It shows how the FBI came in and how it dealt with the local police and how certain information was leaked early or threatened to be leaked early, and how the boots on the ground, being police officers and other authorities, were able to track down some of the bombers. And that's what makes this movie interesting. The first half, which leads up to the bombing, I mean, it's interesting, but it's obviously stuff. We knew this, and you see it coming. You know there was a bombing. You know people are setting themselves up to get hurt because of this, of the sequence of events. But it's sort of the aftermath. It's what went on behind the scenes as they track this down. The acting's good. You know, it doesn't get overly sensationalized too much with the action. There are a couple moments to it that seem a little bit big. It could have been as big. I was not physically there when that happened. But overall, I mean, it's a pretty gripping movie. I wouldn't say entertaining because it's about people who got killed and maimed. But it certainly keeps your interest, and especially once you get past the bombing, it doesn't feel rote. It doesn't feel like it's just going through the motions. So that's a good thing. So, like I said, very similar to Deepwater Horizon and Lone Survivor, and if you like those movies, you should find this one to be gripping, and at least a certain degree of entertainment value, but also honoring the original people involved. So I'm going to have to say Patriots Day kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Live by Night. Ben Affleck directs and stars in this thriller about a disgraced gangster who moves to Florida to spearhead his own speakeasy business.
Do you think that we got where we are by letting some inbreds muscle us?
If that's who you think we are, you're making a fatal miscalculation. We're clerks and bankers and police officers, and we even got a judge. And if you're dumb enough to fight us, I'm gonna rain bloody hellfire down on you and all you love.
So you're threatening me with people who are more powerful than you. So what am I talking to you for?
We haven't had a really good gangster movie in a while. Maybe that's Martin Scorsese's problem. He hasn't done one. He did Silence. It's sort of out this week, I guess. But anyways, Live by Night is Ben Affleck doing his gangster thing. And it's different because it's not the Boston gangster. He's getting out of Boston. He's going down to Florida. And while Affleck has done sort of the gray character, criminal-driven action movie with something like A Town, I think his best movie was Argo, easily. And that's partly because while he was in Argo, he was sort of a secondary character. There's a lot of stuff happening around him, and it was the pacing of the movie. And he didn't have to do much acting as the main character in Argo. This one's a little too Ben Affleck-centric. I mean, he is in the center, and I like Affleck as an actor. I think he's actually underrated in a lot of ways. But there's a lot to star and direct. And I think part of that this movie tends to run a little long. It drags a little bit, especially at some key parts to it. There's a lot of story here, too. That's the other thing. It's based on a book. There's a lot of story that works in a novel, but really should be streamlined a little bit better for a movie. And I think Affleck may have took on more than he could chew trying to do all of it. And that's not a real criticism of Affleck. This is a lot to do. And maybe if he had some other people working on the script for him, or maybe if he had somebody else in the lead role, it would have been smoother. But I mean, the look of the film is really cool. The action sequences that work, it really has a spunky feel to it. It does drag and get a little bit aimless, especially in the middle. But it has some neat moments. It's one of those films that, I don't know, it could have been re-edited, maybe tightened up a little bit, and not be so disparate story-wise. I think it really could have been a killer movie. But still, Argo's his best. And this is, I don't consider this a bad movie. It's just not Affleck's best. I would actually put it as the least of all the films. I mean, Gone Baby Gone was good. The Town's good. And of course, Argo was great. This one's probably lower than all of them, but this is the fourth big movie this guy's directed. And if this is the lowest you're going to dip, you know, that's not bad. I am looking forward to see what he does with the Batman movie that he's working on. And especially because I think Warner Brothers is going to have a tighter leash on him than this movie. This movie felt a little more like a pet project. But overall, well acted, just not as cohesive as I would have liked. But I still am going to say Live by Night kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'll be finalizing the reviews with Monster Trucks. Well, kind of reviews. I'll also talk about the weekly box office and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are wrapping up the show. First off, with our final review. Well, not really a review. It's a preview. This is for Monster Trucks. A young mechanic discovers a creature that lives inside the engine of his newly built monster truck.
What are you?
Chip, what is that?
Creech.
You named him Creech?
He likes hiding in my truck.
Trip, this man might have had a reward, but it's
not going anywhere with you.
Yes, you are.
Watch this.
Hey, stop.
Oh, puns. Isn't that great? I normally, each week, if they don't screen movies, I'll try and catch the movies like as an early Thursday night showing. But I had to go see a couple movies already, and this is, again, not uncommon for January having to check out these movies. Monster Truck, they were not showing anywhere. They didn't screen it for us. In fact, this movie is so notoriously under-supported by its own studio that there was a news story a couple months ago that the studio's essentially written it off. And we're going to get a $115 million loss from this movie, so we're not even going to bother. They have certain advertising that comes out because of the way studios buy ad time is they buy it in blocks and ahead, and then they just put whatever movies are promoting at the time, which is why a movie that appears not to have anyone care about it still gets advertising. They're just filling up their slots. But this film, no one's going to care about it. We're not even going to try to push it. And I guess there were some screenings in like New York and LA, because they screen almost everything there, but not here in flyover country. And then on Thursday nights, they didn't have any early showings. I mean, they showed Sleepless and The Bye Bye Man and Silence. You could go see those Thursday night. You couldn't see Monster Trucks. You had to wait until like Friday afternoon. And that's just not going to happen for me. So I didn't get to see it. I can't say that I'm racing out to go see it this weekend either, because it looks terrible. This looks like if it were like a made-for-TV movie on a Saturday morning with the kids, that'd be fine if it went direct-to-video. For the amount of the money, visual effects that they put on this movie, it should have been probably a lot better. I have to give it a preemptive suck because they never showed it to us. But who knows? It might be a nice win, but it's certainly not going to be worth the tens of millions of dollars that they spent to make the movie. So it gets preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the box office. For once, we actually had kind of a stunning box office, a photo finish, so to speak. Everybody, including myself, I thought that Rogue One was going to be getting around $25 million last week. And it was close. It made $22 million, which is really good. I mean, talk about the hold that it's had. It's held on. And in fact, by the time I'm done with the sentence, it'll have become the highest grossing movie domestically of 2016, topping Finding Dory, which was already up there, and solidifying the top, I think, six spots in worldwide box office for 2016. The top six movies all came from Disney. And that's kind of amazing. Now, yeah, it was Star Wars and Marvel and Pixar, all these acquired properties. But still, talk about Disney having a banner year, and we've talked about that already. But the bigger story wasn't Rogue One holding to over $20 million this past weekend. It was the fact that Hidden Figures beat Rogue One. Nobody saw this coming. Everyone was thinking, oh, it was going to be a tight finish, but they thought, oh, Rogue One would do better, especially as you go through like the matinees on Saturday and Sunday. But Hidden Figures came out on top. It was a photo finish and they won by less than $1 million. I mean, here is your whisper thin market. I mean, there's no prize for number one spot, but it knocked out Rogue One pretty quickly, which is kind of amazing considering what a juggernaut Rogue One was. And considering that it made almost $10 million more than Underworld Blood Wars, and I said that that thing was going to struggle to get to $15 million, and I was totally right. It didn't even get to $14 million. This is, on the low end, closer to The Rise of the Lycans, the prequel they did with Rona Mitra before Kate Beckinsale came back to the franchise. So, yeah, I think this is the last Underworld movie we're going to see. Unless they do the brilliant thing, which I've talked to people about, and everyone seems to agree with me, do an Underworld Resident Evil crossover, and I think you'd have a hit on your hand. You get one movie out of it, but you still have a hit on your hand. But this week, I think, gosh, it's going to be a fight for number one between Patriots Day and Hidden Figures. Now, Hidden Figures does have the disadvantage of having already been out wide last week, and it made almost $23 million last week, and can it make $20 million over that 4 day? Well, that's a little bit of an uphill battle, and Patriots Day you'd think would do better because it hasn't been out yet, so it's going to get that first weekend push. The difference is Hidden Figures gets Monday, and Monday has a special significance to this because Monday is the observed birthday of Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. So generally on Martin Luther King Day weekend, movies that have a possible built-in black audience tend to do a little bit better. And this is very directly plays into the Martin Luther King philosophy. I mean, it's about black people persevering and overcoming prejudice. I mean, it's in the space race, but it certainly fits into that wheelhouse. So you're going to see another photo finish right around $20 million for those two. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Now, one thing I'm doing in 2017 that I'm going to start trying to do is I want to focus a little bit more about some of the on-demand and home video selections. Now, some of the on-demand stuff I'm going to cover in the regular releases because there's stuff that just, it's sort of brand new on demand. Sometimes if there's something that's maybe slipped through the cracks or I haven't seen, or I know it's on demand and it's going to come out in DVD and Blu-ray in the next couple of weeks, or it's already on DVD and Blu-ray and I can't check it out on demand, I'm going to start doing that. So let's talk about Nerdland. Two slackers encroaching on middle age desperately try to become famous in the depressing world of everyday Los Angeles.
We're both 30. Do you know how old 30 is in Hollywood?
Afternoon, ladies.
Will you go away now?
What will it take for us to get a little FaceTime with America?
We need an instant fame plan.
If we were to give the celebrity-obsessed masses something really worth watching, we'd also be launching our careers.
Count me in.
Let's go be heroes. Desperation. I always thought it was a bad thing.
Isn't it?
We've been going about it all wrong. It's not fame we need, it's infamy.
One of the things that first jumped out at me about Nerdland was it was written by Andrew Kevin Walker. And not a whole lot of people in the mainstream know who Andrew Kevin Walker was. He's best known, at least for me, for writing Seven. And he has always jokingly referred to Seven as his love letter to New York City. He used to live in New York City and he hated it. And he, in the movie, he didn't want any monuments. He didn't want it to be the real love letter to New York City. It wasn't trying to make the city a character, and it wasn't having everything take place in Battery Park and at the Statue of Liberty and on the roof of the Empire State Building and Central Park on the bridge. No, it was supposed to show how depressing and awful it was to live in New York City, how claustrophobic and how grimy and it was, and how some of the creepy people that lived in New York City. That was kind of the purpose of Seven in a limited way. This feels like he's doing the same thing to Los Angeles, because I've not lived in Los Angeles, but I have friends who live in Los Angeles. I've been to Los Angeles for extended periods of time. This is a great companion watch movie to La La Land, because La La Land so idolizes Los Angeles and makes it the land of dreams and opportunities, where really it can be a really depressing, kind of gross place to live. In a way, this feels like this should have come out in the 90s. There's been a bunch of movies recently that feel like that. Like, I remember the movie Wiener Dog last year, I was like, that really felt like should have been a movie from the 90s. And I've been noticing that lately, and this made me feel like this. This feels like it was kind of cut from the cloth of Clerks. Those kind of indie films from the 90s that showed ne'er-do-wells and slackers trying to get ahead in life. And aside from a little bit of some cell phone usage in the film, you know, it could take place in the 90s as well. It's very sarcastic. It's very sardonic. It has Paul Rudd and Patton Oswalt as the main characters' voices. And even though they're older than the characters are, they kind of play these guys who are turning 30, and it's a rustic kind of animation. And again, the kind of animation you'd expect to have seen in the 90s. But if you're at all cynical about life and people and living in a big city like Los Angeles, this one has some funny moments. It doesn't completely hold together, and it does tend to get overly depressing at times in terms of its outlook, but it still is an entertaining, different film. So if you want to see something strange and different and you haven't seen, you're looking for something that's outside of the mainstream, check out Nerdland. It kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
The other films that are out on DVD and Blu-ray, Deepwater Horizon, which I talked about extensively when I was talking about Patriots Day. There's also The Accountant, a Ben Affleck movie, you know, and actually I thought he was great in that one. That's why I like to see more of Ben Affleck as an actor. I think he's better when he's not directed by himself. The Birth of a Nation, which has just disappeared thanks to rape charges and sexual assault allegations for its director. Max Steel, which was, like Monster Trucks, kind of came and went and was sneaked in there into release. Then there was Kevin Hart, What Now, which is a nice little comedy stand-up bit from him. And then finally for TV, you've got Homeland Season 5 and Mr. Robot Season 2. What a great time for that one to come out on DVD and Blu-ray. That is it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Founder, Split, Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage, The Resurrection of Gavin Stone, and possibly The Red Turtle. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.